Welcome to Music Majors Unplugged. Do you want to find your place in the world of music and succeed in a career? Do you find yourself up late at night thinking about what your next steps should be? Do you have ambitious goals but are unsure how to pursue them? Hello, my name is Aiden and I too was and still am a college student who wants to pursue music for a living but is unsure of what steps to take. I too feel overwhelmed with all of the things that I have tried to do to further my career and wished everything would just fall into place. I wanted to win a job, I wanted to be accepted into a summer festival, and I wanted to make a living in music, but I kept telling myself that I wasn't a strong enough player and that maybe music was not for me. I discovered that masterclasses were where I learned the best. Just listening and talking to professionals is the easiest way to learn about where you want to take your career in the future. In this podcast, you will learn about new career paths, listen to professionals that are working in the industry, and learn advice to take yourself to the next level so you can find your place in music. Welcome back to Music Majors Unplugged. Today, we have a very special guest, a good friend of mine, Levi Temple. Levi Temple is a composer and a trombonist, the recent winner of the Iowa Brass Competition of 2024, and just an all-around good guy. So how is it going, Levi?
Well, you just called me a good guy, so I'm doing a lot better now. That means a lot coming from a guy like you.
Oh, thank you. Well, this is a little bit of a different podcast. Normally, I have on kind of grown professionals, but today I decided that interviewing a college student might give nice insight into maybe some other people's situations and what they might like to do. Now, as I said before, Levi is a great performer, but he's also a great composer, and he has this amazing album called See You Round. No, it's called What Once Was. Dang it. All right. It's called What Once Was.
That sucks. No, it is called
the what title track is See You Around, or the first track.
Nope.
The first track you composed.
Yes. There it is. Yeah. That's true.
Why I mix those up all the time.
It's so infectious for you, isn't it?
Yeah, that's what it is. That is exactly what it is. Anyway, so What Once Was is Levi's debut album. Grammy nominated, didn't win.
Yeah, I actually didn't even get nominated either. But I've been keeping the Grammy nominated.
It's in the description.
Yeah, I've been keeping that. I wanna make sure that people just think that for a little bit.
Next year. We'll next see. Year album of the
next,
year.
Next album. Maybe we'll have better luck.
But I thought today might be good. Levi's kind of a jazzer. It might be good to talk about writing an album and kind of the process that it went through for you to make this thing come to fruition, because I think there are a lot of people out there that probably have good ideas. They don't really know where to start. So we should just start at the beginning. The first track, See You Around, that was the first one you composed. It's not the first track. First one you composed.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of walk us through how that started and the first inception of the piece, actually.
Yeah, great. Well, the version of See You Around that's on the album is not the first version of See You Around I made. The first version of See You Around was actually a big band chart that I wrote for our jazz band to play here at UNI. And that's usually not the strategy, I think, with creating tunes that you're trying to have, you know, remembered, or if you want somebody to be able to pick out that tune from another one. Normally, you don't put it into an elaborate big band arrangement right away. I mean, maybe you do, but I guess. I don't know. but the big band chart kind of took the tune that I had written for See You Around and just kind of that melody and that lead sheet style and kind of played on variations of that. The big band chart kind of started out a lot slower than like we had a chorale section right at the beginning, and then that ended and we started the tempo and kind of the actual tune itself, and then, you know, the arrangement for a big band instrumentation followed by kind of a modulation and a, you know, changing of styles. There was just a many things going on in that big band arrangement that kind of took away from what the tune itself actually was. So taking that and kind of stripping it down to actually it's just bare bones of what the tune is, and how can I just bring it out all that the song itself actually is, rather than you know, trying to create. It was the first big band chart I ever. Well, that's not the truth. That's not true. It was one of the first big band charts I ever wrote, and so that was. I was trying to maybe be a little bit too show offish with that one, but.
Was it the first one you had played by you and I?
Yes, that was my first.
So that's college. A big deal.
Yeah, it was fun and it went really well. Such a raw time. You know, all the knowledge that gets gained even in a year kind of just points out all the things that you didn't know when you were doing something a long time ago.
Right.
Besides the point. Yeah, so the version for the album, I had processes for putting together all of these tracks, but this one had to be different since it already existed before I was started writing for the album itself. I'm kind of getting away from your question a little bit. I'll start answering
it.
I'll end up answering a bunch of questions maybe by talking about this, but the album itself has a different instrumentation for basically every single track. And with this one, my goal was, I can get into the details of why that happened later, but with this one, I could just really hear that J.J. Johnson and Kai Winding, two trombone rhythm section quintet sound. I could just hear the counterpoint between the two trombones and just kind of how, I don't know, that I grew up, or when I, not grew up, but when I started getting into jazz music, there was an album called J.J.'s. It was J.J.'s Origins of the Savoy Sessions, and I think it's actually just a culmination of a bunch of different recordings that happened at this specific recording studio. But that album has just a bunch of that instrumentation, and it just was really... it's just fun music to listen to. I mean, the overall chemistry between two trombones and a rhythm section, I mean, it sounds... I don't know. I just really enjoy it, and I wanted to write for that, and so I was able to take the melody for "See You Around" and kind of write a counterline to it. I took part of the trombone solo that I wrote for the big band and was able to strip that down into two lines for a little duet solo. And yeah, it was also really fun because I got to play with one of my favorite trombonists that I've played with, Maggie Kramers, who was a former student at UNI. Yeah, so that, I mean, loaded answer there, but yeah. That's kind of how I was able to take the first thing that I wrote and apply it to this project. But yeah, there was a lot.
So I was there when it was premiered, I guess, as the big band arrangement. And then I was also there when it was premiered as the combo as well. But I think it's like it's almost a very different piece, even though it's the same necessarily. Like it's big band versus the like little, is it a quintet? Is it five?
Yeah.
Yeah. Is like a different vibe. What, like when you were going through the process of changing it over, like, were you thinking of things specifically like, oh, this needs to be there? Cause obviously you have much less at your disposal. And then which version do you prefer? I suppose.
Are you kind of asking like what was I able to extract from the big band version into
right,
the smaller
yeah, like,
version?
Yeah. Like what is your thought process? Cause not everything can be there. Right.
Right.
Obviously. So what are you deciding needs to like, how do you decide what needs to go in?
Sure. Well the tune and the changes, obviously mm-hmm. because you want to make sure that you're writing, for the same tune. But it's just a different arrangement of it really, which, I mean, we're right now working in an arranging class on just writing big band charts. And so I've had, thankfully, some experience in writing that before I got into this class. But, we've heard a bunch of different songs and their original recordings and how these big band versions of them are, like, vastly different. There's a lot of, you know, stylistic changes. I mean, it could be a whole different tempo, a whole different meter. I mean, there's just a lot of... you know, a lot of room to go with writing an arrangement for a big band, especially when you have that larger instrumentation. But doing this kind of the backwards way, it kind of made me realize that I didn't really want to do a whole lot with the big band chart, and I kind of wanted to just make a whole new arrangement on the same tune, aside from the fact that I did take those two lines from the trombone solely
right.
From the big band chart and kind of make it fit a little bit better just for two horns. That was probably... that and the tune itself are probably the only things I extracted from the big band version. And what I really wanted to do with the small band or the small group version was just, like I said, pay homage to that quintet, two trombone quintet sound, and just, you know, have fun with it. Like every time we play it, it's at a brisker tempo, mm-hmm. you know, a little bit hotter. Brisk and hot are the words that I just used. What I would argue mean two different things,
but in a separately tempo context.
But in a tempo, they mean the exact same thing. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, funny how the world works, right? But no, I mean, lost my train of thought a little bit. I just kind of wanted to make a whole new thing, and just, you know, pay respect to that sound and kind of fall in line with the whole idea of, you know, starting anew, because mm-hmm. that kind of ties into the overall theme of the album and where that track comes in, as you know, as well as just kind of, it's just a celebration of the music and of, you know, being done with the album. It's the last track, and you know, it kind of serves multiple purposes in that way. I don't really have a preference either way. Yeah. I think both the big band version and the small group version are, they hold special places in my heart just for, you know, who all played on them, you know, where I was in my life when both were premiered, just kind of how they both sound too, and like what, you know, musically they have to offer. They, you know, I maybe it's hard for me to just pick favorites out right. of all my stuff, since it all means so much to be able to do all of it.
Yeah. And you mentioned the album has like a theme to it. It's a programmatic album. Would you agree? Yeah.
Yeah.
We want to talk to that a little bit.
I do. Yeah. That's like my favorite part of the whole thing. It's like, so I mean, like I grew up, when I like started getting into music and actually listening to it rather than just, you know, hearing whatever was around me. I noticed myself kind of gravitating eventually towards just the concept of the album rather than a bunch of different songs you hear on the radio or whatnot, or, you know, your friends are showing you.
That's like a music school thing, right? It's like you come to school and you like, well, I think most people, yeah, I would agree.
I would agree. Like, not everybody, but, yeah.
They like yeah. start to appreciate this whole concept instead of.
Sure.
Yeah.
And not to, I'm not trying to play the I did it first card. That's not what I'm doing.
No,
but I do I noticed this kind of around freshman year of high school, and maybe everybody has their own, you know, everybody has their own. When did they start realizing that a body of work actually can be a body mm-hmm. of work and not just a collection
right.
of work? But that was, you know, I'm a rap fan before I'm a jazz fan, which is an interesting thing to say, but it's, you know, it's where my heart lies. But there's a lot of rap albums that like Kendrick Lamar, Tyler the Creator, J. Cole, these rappers like to tell stories from front to beginning, and they try not to put any filler tracks in there. You know, they have an idea in their head as to what's going on throughout the whole entire album. And I just, that appealed to me so much. And so when I wanted to write my first album, I didn't, you know, going into college, I didn't think I'd walk out with an album, but, you know, you end up doing it after the second year and all of a sudden, you know, sky's feels like the limit. You can do whatever. But with the conceptual idea of it, I knew that whatever my first album would be, there needed to be something that tied across through it. Whether it was just maybe a theme of like, you know, hey, I'm a college student and this is the college life, and so I'll write a track about eating a 2-minute breakfast or, you know, showing up to class late or whatever. You know, I don't, those would probably be terrible tunes, but no, I just knew that there needed to be kind of a narrative to the whole thing. And it, interestingly enough, I went through a bit of a breakup before the school year started, in which I wrote most of this music, and I didn't write this album because of the breakup, but it was just kind of where my head was at this whole time, and I was able to kind of start just visualizing this story, not necessarily my story, but this story of a relationship kind of building, and, you know, reaching a climactic point of happiness, and then, you know, the relationship itself is kind of built on a foundation of underlying problems that aren't really noticed until, you know, you kind of get deeper into the relationship. You kind of see all these, you know, flaws and whatnot. You just, you know, you get over the honeymoon stage or whatever mm-hmm. you want to call it. And eventually you kind of reach a breaking point. in which, you know, you two separate and you kind of just have to face the facts like, oh, we just jumped into this blindly and, you know, we paid the price for it because we, you know, I don't know, everything's an experience. Regardless, then I was able to start kind of thinking about like, oh, what musically needs to happen in order to be able to tell this story, especially if there's no lyrics or anything. Like, the only real reference you're going to have is the name of the track itself. That's kind of the only thing telling you where you're at in the story, unless I take the time to verbally explain to you exactly what's happening at every moment. But otherwise, I was just trying to think, like, how can I, you know, what style, what tempo, what key, what kind of, like, tonality are we going to write? What's, like, the overall harmony? How fast or slow does that move? The instrumentation itself, what are those kind of representing? I started to think about, like, what instruments served as what characters, and kind of their roles throughout the whole thing. There ended up being a lot of minor details I wrote into it that are just more little, like, Easter eggs for me as far as where they fit in the story and what maybe a certain note means or a certain fill or, you know. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that was kind of the process as to how I was able to think about tying all these songs together and putting a line through all of them. Eventually, like I said, you know, we talked about See You Around was the first tune that I had written, but I didn't write it for the album because I didn't know the album was going to be a thing. But the eventually, all the tunes that I was writing started to fit more into the shape of this story rather than, oh, well, let's just take a bunch of tunes and what one's going to sound best for the happy part? What's going to sound best for the breakup part? You know what I mean? Yeah, and then eventually I just kind of realized, oh, you know, this music is, it's all instrumental. There's no words, not a whole lot of guidance to the listener. And I'd also heard Robert Glasper's Black Radio 3 album, which starts off with this super beautiful narration over this piano. And it's kind of, you know, it's talking about some different stuff than what I was talking about on this, but I just thought that that was a cool way to just set up the album. It kind of gave me an idea of what was I going to be listening to throughout that album? What did this music all mean? And I kind of wanted to emulate that vibe. And so I threw that same instrumentation and that became the intro. So that was a cool experience too.
Notably, our professor, Dr. Rohde, is the one who's narrating the first track, who will possibly be a future guest, but yeah, he's the best.
That was a fun experience doing that with him, because him and I hadn't been, we've grown a lot closer since then, but he didn't entirely know.
Yeah, this was early in your relationship.
He didn't entirely know who I was. He knew, I asked him, we recorded the album, or we recorded his part right before school ended, early May. And I had just like officially like met him the August before that. So we kind of had the whole year to like get to know each other better, but all I did was sit in his orchestra and I didn't really talk to him a whole lot. But kind of after hearing his voice and just the way that he, you know, enunciated his speech, I just kind of figured, you know, he's got the right voice for this. And it was really fun to collaborate with him on that, because at first he didn't even know if I was serious about it. He thought I emailed him and told him about this idea, and he emailed my trombone professor and was like, is this a joke? Like, is this guy kidding? and my trombone teacher told me that, and I got to interact with him and joke about that later. It was really funny to, you know, see this at the beginning stages of what the hell is this guy talking about? This goofball in my trombone section is trying to, wants to start an album and he wants me to be on it. Like, what does that even mean? And now we're at the point where we can look back and be like, that was cool. I'm glad we got to do that. And I'm glad, you know, he's a great guy, and I'm glad he was willing to be a part of it, because it turned out great. I'm really proud of it.
Yeah. Kind of going more on the logistics side, I think this is like a nice segue of like, it really does take a village to make a project like this. Right. And you didn't do this on your own. I was watching it. So you're writing the songs. You're like, oh gosh, this could be an album. And let's kind of talk about the funding aspect, because you paid everybody who was a part of the project.
Yeah, this was it was an expensive endeavor, but thankfully, you know, if you believe enough in something, money is just a, you know, there will be more money. Mm-hmm. You can, you know, work and get more money, and you'll feel better about that whole thing. Like if you really believe in something, you dedicate your all to it, and you know, money shouldn't be an issue if you really care about something. But sometimes it is for people, and I guess I say that coming from a fortunate background. I know I'm very blessed. My parents were super supportive of me, both, you know, just as parents and also financially. So I haven't necessarily had to struggle the way that others have. So I know that I'm saying this coming from that perspective, which is a little unfair, but. You know, I did take a financial dent by doing this album. Like it cost way more than I made to put it all together. But I was able to apply for some funding from the school. They offered this experiential learning fund, kind of giving money to students who had clear visions for projects. And you are multiple time earner.
Third time now? No, yeah, third time.
Jeez Louise.
Wait, is that our junior? Yeah.
We are juniors, yeah.
What did I get it for? I don't even remember. Microphones.
Yeah. There you go.
Right now.
You are now listening to the Experiential Learning Funds.
Yeah. We're very fortunate at our college that we have this thing called the Experiential Learning Fund. And I would assume most colleges have something along this line.
Yeah, and maybe some colleges even are even better about this than
I'm sure
than
so.
Ours is. Not that... You know, ours is great, but they have, I think, maybe like...
It's limited funding.
Yeah, you know, not only... They give you up to like $500 for a project, and most of the time, you know, with us music kids and our big heads and our big ideas... We all have big ideas. We all, we won't be able to get the funding from the school to cover all of it, but, you know, every cent is worth something, and it means a lot from the... It means a lot for us to know that the school is willing to support our projects. And yeah, but other than that, I mean, I had to, you know, that was able to cover the tuning of the piano, which ended up being an expense that I didn't even anticipate. And I guess that's another thing, maybe like when you're planning to do stuff, you kind of have to, you know, now I'll go into the next project thinking, okay, maybe I'll have to budget this much for it, or at least, you know, plan around this and maybe, you know, set that budget on the higher side of things just to be safe, because you never know kind of what expenses are going to pop up if you want to have the job done right. But that covered the Experiential Learning Fund was used to cover the piano tuning and then also to pay the recording engineer who mixed the album with me and also... recorded it. We were able to use his equipment and his space, which ended up being really great. That was like best case scenario because I'm 3 minutes away from, you know, I live
it's on campus.
On campus. And I live 3 minutes away from the place where we recorded it, at least right now. But then besides that, I mean, I had to pay for the mastering, album artwork, pay all the musicians out of pocket. And there ended up being a lot more musicians. Like I said, I had that mixed instrumentation. And another thing I'll note quickly is that being in college, it was great to be able to do this, but also like I just kind of, I chose to do this not thinking about the fact that I wanted to pay everybody. But I included several different people on the same instrument. Like I had two tenor sax players, but neither of them played on a track together. But I just had a certain vision as far as whose sound fit better for this tune. I had two piano players on the album as well. And, you know, I kind of just was able to put each of these people kind of right where I wanted them as far as, and you know, everybody did an amazing job. It was so great. I joked that I felt like DJ Khaled, even though I was playing trombone on the record. I, you know, got carried by all the features and whatnot. It's just funny to think about, you know, it sounded, everybody sounded so great on it. It was so, it was such a blessing. Anyway, sorry. So we had to pay for the musicians, and also pay for, any merchandise. And the only merchandise I did for it was just CDs of the record. Trying to think if there were any other expenses. I guess it doesn't really matter. Right. You know, if you're going to make an album, you'll find out. It's great. You'll love it. But yeah, I mean, after I had realized this, thankfully the musicians weren't in a position where they were like, I need my money right now. We just recorded this. You're going to pay me right now. And eventually, kind of a month after we got done recording, I think everything was fully funded. I'd been working pretty much that entire month just to kind of get my financial state back in order and make sure everybody was getting paid and all the parts of the album were, you know, fully funded and whatnot. But, you know, I mean, it just took a little bit of time and patience to know that everything's going to be fine financially. We got to focus on making a beautiful thing. And that was, you know, very rewarding to do that because I just kind of learned to just chill out. Because if you really believe in something, it will come to life.
Yeah.
And everything will be fine. And hopefully. And everything was more than fine. It was, yeah. It's great.
So I think one of my favorite parts of the story of recording you guys all doing this was the fact that you were in Africa the week before, right?
Oh, goodness, yeah.
So,
well, it was, oh, my God, there were a lot of, if you got a question.
No, go for it.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, there were just a lot of factors that played into how it all worked out. Most of the people, I believe all but one that were on the album, went to South Africa. We left, I believe, 2 weeks before we recorded, and we got back maybe 2 or 3 days from Africa before we did the recording. But we had planned the recording in advance with full knowledge of the trip and kind of where it was. Let's see. Yeah, all but one member of the album, well, I guess, and the recording engineer, were not on the trip. But we had to plan for that, knowing that the jazz band's very fortunate to be able to record in this same studio at the end of finals, which is kind of like a 3-day process. But after that was done, we had like a day, and we then got on the plane and went to Africa. And so we couldn't fit that in. We couldn't fit my project in. It took 2 days to record my album, and I kind of was budgeting for that, knowing because we had 7 tracks to record, and we had to, you know, we wanted to make sure we gave ourselves enough time to do the whole thing, not rush anything, because that's not how art gets made. Yeah, maybe sometimes, but not this art. Not
depends.
Not how I wanted this one to go. But then there was also a thing where the studio was, like the whole music building that the studio is in, was going to be like without air conditioning and without
that's right.
One either hot or cold water. Maybe it was just going to be like lukewarm water. But I don't even know.
Forgot
but
about
like
that.
There was like some kind of maintenance being done on the whole building. And so we knew that if we were going to be recording in there past the last day that we recorded, it was going to be I about said a sweatshop, but that would have not been the right term for it. It would have been like...
It would have been sweltering.
It would have been quite hot. we'll call it quite hot. But that, you know, so we had to budget around that. And, maybe it would have been nice to do the recording earlier, but I had to get done with all the music first. When we did the Experiential Learning Fund, the big thing was you kind of have to have a timeline already figured out for everything.
Yeah.
And that was, you know... That was helpful for me because I was able to end up, you know, forming a plan for all of this. We started to get rehearsals scheduled. I knew I'd have all the music done by the end of spring break. It would be out to everybody then. I made a plan, like I said, a plan for rehearsals. And then we had a date that of which the music would be recorded by. And then a date also of which it would be released by. So, you know, it was kind of nice to be able to get that schedule, but then it was just kind of tricky figuring out when are we going to get this recorded? Oh, crap, we can't do it past this date, but we can't do it before this date because we're going to be in Africa. So we had like 2 days or 3 days off after we got back. And then we were right back in. And I think all of them maybe were not as, I don't want to say stressed, but nobody was nobody was pressed to do the record. Right. They were just like, okay, we're going to do the record and we'll get our parts done. And then we'll call it quits. Cause they were, I hope just happy to be on it and not feeling like they needed to, be in their best physical state, not be as, or best mental state would probably be a better, determination. But yeah, I mean, it was a time. we got it done. And the recording session was great. It taught me so much, just the whole experience, like the whole recording the album and mixing it and learning about all the things that go into making a project like this. Super educational for me, which I think was the whole, that's the whole point of the Experiential Learning Fund is, we're going to give you money, but you need to learn something.
I think the mission statement of that project is literally like something that you cannot get from the music department here.
Right.
Like what are you going to learn with this money that you cannot get from this department? So,
right.
And I think I would agree. Like you definitely learned a lot more than a lot of the music department could teach.
It was a good experience. Yeah. And I had a lot of assistance from, there's several members of the faculty here that have done similar projects. The jazz studies professors have maybe at least 10 records.
Well, yeah, you got their belt. Your record company was through.
Yes, that was another thing. Yeah. My trombone professor and then the two professors of in the jazz department here, not all, but a fair percentage of their albums are actually go through Skydeck Music, which is for lack of a better term, it's a label based out of New Zealand, ran by a UNI alum who went here for his master's. And now he's doing great work, spreading the goodness of jazz all throughout New Zealand, and he's doing awesome stuff. And it was great to be able to meet him and collaborate with him on this whole thing. But they had known him, and they were thankfully willing to kind of set me up with him to be able to do this, because it could have been really easy for them to be like, no. He deals with professionals.
Right.
He doesn't deal with these amateur ass projects. Pardon my French. he doesn't, want to just waste his time on something that might not be fully real. I mean, I knew in my heart that every bit of this was real, and I had the utmost intention of putting 110% into the project and making it sound as good as possible, and not just sound like, oh, I just want to. What's it like to record an album? Because I know that, like, I wanted this to be released on streaming services. I wanted everybody in the world to at least be able to hear it if they wanted to. And when you do that, you can't put a half-assed product out there. You need to try and, show your best self. Mm-hmm. Because that could be the first impression of you for a lot of people. The founder of Skydeck Music, who was super helpful, taught me a lot about just kind of the whole process of doing this. So I learned a lot from him. And he has since, I think, put out the Shorter Stories album. Mm-hmm. Our jazz professor made renditions of, I believe, 9 Wayne Shorter tunes. And messed with them a little bit, put his own spin on it.
Right after his passing, too, yeah?
That was before his passing.
Was it?
Yeah.
Oh.
I think.
I thought he was working on it before, and then he ended up passing, and then it was released. But I could be wrong on my timeline. My
God. I'm just going to look this up super quick. I'm sorry. No. I want to make sure. Oh, gosh. Because it was released in the summer. It was actually, his album was recorded and released in between when mine was recorded and released. In between when my album was recorded, mm-hmm. and then our actual release date. Because my goal was to release it kind of during the next school year when everybody was back and we could have an album show to, It did come out after. I guess I don't know how long he'd been working. No, I think because he'd been done with the arrangements. He had done a recital in the previous fall. Wayne died in March, and he, Mr. Chris, had done a recital in October with this music.
Oh, so it was, so the, it music was the product done, of...
And maybe the recording came from, oh, now he's passed away. Let's make this happen. I don't, and who knows what the exact timeline was. Regardless,
yeah, it was just cool.
It's a beautiful, beautiful album. It pays a lot of respect to Wayne, and it also showcases the great talent of all the faculty members that are playing on it, and also the writing of Mr. Chris.
Yeah.
But anyway, that was also released under Skydeck, and so it's just cool to be able to say that I got an album on the same label as my professors. But, you know, I try to keep a good balance of knowing that I'm still a youngling, so I'm grateful to be in the same breath as them, in that regard. But I also know that, you know, I put the work into this, and so why not be recognized in the same breath as them? You know, I don't know. I try to stay humble, but I'm also like, hell yeah, dude, we got that done. That's fine. Anyway.
So having done all this process, what advice would you have for people that, you know, want to pursue this action of making an album?
Shoot. I mean, just believe in the music. 'Cause that was the biggest thing for me, is that like this album has some of my favorite music on it of all time. Like it's, you know, I'll have my own bias forever on it, which is not a bad thing. You know, you got to really believe in the art that you're putting out there, because that's why art is a great thing, is because people that made it care about it and they believe it needed to be created. So have a vision. Don't go in blindly. But if you do go in blindly, you know, have a blast with it, because the whole process is super fun, and it's more real that way too. Just kind of knowing that my album is real because I put my whole heart into it. But like a live album is real because it's live and in the moment. You know, I mean, like you get the full performance aspect of, like, you know, a lot of albums will have their own reason for being completely real. But that's I think the biggest thing is just believe in it. You know, put the worry aside as to how it's really going to sound. All you have to do to prepare for it. You know, do the research to figure out what you can do to make the process as easy as possible for you and those around you. But, you know, just put your whole 100% into it. You know, don't half-ass it. Give it all you got, because, you know, you'll make your best product that way.
Yeah. Well, I want to use this opportunity to kind of transition, and I think I'll make this like a part two of the podcast, so transition now.
All right, I hope you enjoyed today's episode. If you could take 30 seconds to follow us and share with a friend who also might find this information helpful, that would mean a lot. Follow us on social media. It means the world to know that this podcast is making a difference in your life. Keep practicing, performing, and learning. We'll be back soon with another episode.